It's Sunday morning, time for the great outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on a very cold January morning throughout virtually all of America. Thanks for being with me. I hope you'll enjoy the show. I actually, last week, if you may recall, I was on my way to Scotland when I did the show, and I promised that I would give a report on what life is like across the pond in January, and it turned out to be a trip far exceeding my expectations in many, many ways, but left me also really wondering about what the future of hunting is in Scotland. And my purpose for going to Scotland was I went to go pheasant hunting on the west coast, wasn't very far from the famed Turnberry Golf Course, stayed in an absolutely wonderful place, and we saw an incredible amount of the Scottish countryside over several days. Amazingly, in January in Scotland, I didn't need my raincoat. How often can you say that? Never. It rains in Scotland in January and December and February. Of course, it rains a lot there, but particularly in the winter, it rains almost every day. We had beautiful weather, which was shocking in and of itself. But during the trip, I learned a lot about what's gone wrong, if you will, in Scotland and what could go wrong in America if we follow some of the things that are happening, not only in Scotland, but also in England, around the right to hunt. And so I thought I'd take a moment just to talk about some things that have happened there in the UK that, if they made their way here, would be really problematic. The first will not make its way here. It's called Right to Roam, and it's a law that's in Scotland that all land actually is open to the public. You may have title to it, but everyone can walk across your property. Think about that for a second. If that happened in America, well, I can't even begin to imagine. But in Scotland, they've had centuries of walking over people's properties, and generally they stick to trails, but apparently you don't have to stick to a trail. Right to roam means that you could go and set up a tent and camp out in somebody's lawn in front of their house. You can't be in their garden, you can't be in their driveway, but apparently you can just pitch a tent on somebody's lawn. I couldn't believe this. But what is happening now with Right to Roam is the anti-hunting movement in Scotland apparently has real traction, and they find out where pheasant hunts are going to take place, and sometimes they come and they disrupt it. So it is now more difficult to be able to pheasant hunt in certain areas of Scotland because of this Right to Roam, and people just simply show up in the middle of your hunt and disrupt it. So that we have laws in America against harassing and disrupting hunts, but that is happening in Scotland, and it's increasingly happening. The other thing that's happening is there are virtually no young hunters, and we talk about this a lot in America, but it's far worse. The average age of a hunter, bird hunter in Scotland is 60 years old. Scotland is about to pass a law which bans lead shot of all kinds. And many of you may know the English pride themselves on their very fine shotguns, none of which can take steel shot. There are certainly alternatives, which we know about, bismuth and others. But they're going to ban lead shot for everything. In the United States, we have fought hard to ban lead shot. I think we're going to lose ultimately. For now, almost 40 years, you've not been able to use lead shot for hunting waterfowl. Any shooting over water have to use non-toxic shot, but we still use lead shot for shooting everything else. Scotland, you can't. They have an enormous increase in raptors and predators. And going back decades, Scotland and the UK was, United Kingdom and England was known to each property, the game belonged to the landowner, which is the most fundamental difference from life over there and life here. In America, game belongs to the people, and it's regulated by, in the case of Illinois, the Department of Natural Resources, and every state has their own regulations. And if it's migratory birds, it's managed by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Scotland, the game belongs to the people. Excuse me, the game belongs to the landowner. It's private property. And in fact, this place we were staying, a beautiful salmon stream ran through it, and I inquired about fishing there. And he said, well, I own the river, but I don't own the salmon. The salmon belonged to my neighbor, who's been here since the 12th century. So they controlled predators because they were came with the property. They were a right of the property owner. And that changed a few years ago. And now, in particularly raptor populations are all protected. And the predator populations have exploded across Scotland and across England, which is causing, logically, a great decline in the bird populations as well. So you've got right to roam. You've got lead shot bans coming. You've got the average age is 60 years old. You have predators. And the tradition is being lost. But there's something else that's happening that is happening in America as well, but as in Scotland, they call them estates, they don't call them so much farms, as they pass from one generation to another, or they get consolidated and bought up by others, it means there's fewer opportunities to hunt. And apparently in Scotland, many estates that have for a long time been places where hunting's taken place have now gone to generations that don't believe in hunting, and they're not continuing it. Or they're being purchased and consolidated, so there are fewer opportunities. And I talked about this a few weeks ago with what's happening in Canada, where the average size of a farm in Saskatchewan is now over 4,000 acres, when 30 years ago it was about 650 acres. It's a section. So we have seen a huge change in America as farms are getting bigger, which means it's harder. There are fewer doors to knock on to get permission to hunt. The exact same thing is happening in Scotland. Only more and more people are buying places where hunting was taking place, but they don't want to allow hunting anymore. So I left Scotland, which has a hunting heritage that goes back to the beginning of firearms, one of the richest hunting heritages in all the world, long known for its grouse and pheasants. And I left there wondering, how much longer can this last? And a very unsettling thought as I prepared to leave Scotland and, of course, came back to America, and I've thought about it a lot since, is how much longer is hunting going to last in Scotland? You've got all these obstacles. And hunting in Scotland goes back to the beginning. I mean, bird hunting in Scotland goes back to the beginning of firearms. And Scotland was legendary for its grouse hunting and pheasant hunting. It's also a country where rabbit hunting has been used. It has been a primary source of hunting activity for generations. And they just passed a law which bans hunting of rabbits if you have more than two dogs. Think about that for a second. The government has gotten so deep into the anti-hunting elements of Scotland that you cannot hunt rabbits if you have more than two dogs. And they've already taken a big whack at fox hunting, which is also a long-standing tradition in Scotland, that is horse riding horses for fox. So I really think that while it's not going to end tomorrow, you can see the sun setting on bird hunting in Scotland. And hopefully that doesn't happen. But all the things that I've commented on here in the last little bit in this morning's show all line up to say it's going to be really hard to be able to continue bird hunting in Scotland. And the primary problem at the end of the day is the game belongs to the landowner, not the people. And so people who don't hunt don't have a stake in seeing it preserved. And fortunately in America, game belongs to the people. I'll be back in just a moment with much more on the great outdoors. And when I do, I'm going to talk about some things that are happening now that we have a new president and some of his nominations and what I think they mean for conservation. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. And first, a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Hiking, camping, and hunting, it's all an adventure in the great outdoors, but nature can be tough. You need to be ready for anything and everything. Chevy Silverado is built to handle the toughest conditions and get you everywhere you want to go worry-free. Silverado's designed to handle the big jobs. It's built for the great outdoors. With over 13,000 pounds of towing capacity and trailering sway control, Silverado can haul the biggest loads on the roughest roads and keep you cool as a Sunday drive. With 8 available cameras and up to 14 different views, it can spot trouble before it gets to you. That's peace of mind. And when you're ready for the backcountry, Chevy Silverado 1500 ZR2 owns the off-road. You name it, we run over it. No wonder it's Motor Trend's 2023 four-wheeler pickup truck of the year. So see your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and check out a Chevy Silverado. It's freedom to explore the great outdoors.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. Thank you for being with me. Hope that you are enjoying the show this morning. I'm going to move from Scotland and what I saw there and what I came home with to turning the page in many ways here. And this is not a political comment, and please don't take it as one. But we have a completely different mindset that is moving into Washington, D.C. when it comes to conservation and what it means for natural resource management. And from the appointments made so far, and of course, individuals have to be confirmed, Secretary of Interior has to be confirmed, undersecretaries have to be confirmed, we're going to see a change to active management of our lands. And there's been an appointment in the Department of Agriculture, which I'll talk more about in the coming weeks, of an individual that I actually know well, like very much. He's extremely competent. And when he's confirmed, I will pass on who it is. But given that he's not been confirmed yet, in the event he weren't, I don't want to mention his name. However, there's an individual being appointed for an undersecretary position in agriculture who believes that we fundamentally have to change the way we manage our forests. And this will be potentially one of the greatest transformations we could have. You've heard me talk for years about how poorly managed our forests are and the consequences of such. And of course, we've had these just absolutely horrible fires in California tens of thousands of people dislocated. Not entirely, but as I discussed last week, largely because of lack of management of our forestry lands. So across the Department of Interior and also throughout agriculture, we are going to see a shifting to active management. And in the case of the Forest Service, it's hard to believe this. The Forest Service does not take air quality into consideration when they determine as a primary factor whether to put out a fire or let a fire continue. Air quality. That's why the air quality in the West has been so terrible every summer for any number of the past summers, because of the terrible air quality from these fires. And of course, we saw it across the East Coast and the Midwest 2 years ago, and to some extent again last year with the fires in Canada. Obviously, the fires in California are different. That's not Forest Service. Houses are not under the purview of the Forest Service, and so you have the burning of all these toxic chemicals in these houses. But it is absolutely going to change that the Forest Service is going to, I believe, have its entire mandate rewritten for how it manages forests. And at the top of the list is going to be human health. The Forest Service is so badly outdated in how it looks at the management of fires. It's just impossible for me sitting here in 2025 for us to believe that human health, not property, but human health is not a primary concern of how you manage forest fires, because the cost to human health from these fires that have been raging across the West now for the last 25 years is very high. So I think you'll see a big change there. I also think you're going to see a huge change in Interior under Secretary Bergen. You are going to see active management across the board of our Fish and Wildlife Refuges and the entire Department of Interior system, Bureau of Land Management. I believe it's real. The Bureau of Land Management is going to be moved out of Washington and moved into a western state. There are no BLM lands. I don't think there are BLM lands within over 1,000 miles, maybe not even 2,000 miles of Washington, D.C. And yet the BLM is, and yet that's where their headquarters are. So this idea that we move some of these offices closer to where, or in fact, not closer, we move them to where the lands they manage are located. It's not a novel thing if you're in business, but it's certainly a novel thing for the government. I think that's absolutely going to happen. We'll wait to see how quickly it can happen, but I think it's quite likely that you're going to see the Bureau of Land Management move west. I think it's quite possible you're going to see the Fish and Wildlife Service have its Washington headquarters greatly reduced, moving out into the field. I'm certain in the Department of Agriculture, for all of you listening in agriculture, you're going to see exactly what happens when we move the NRCS, Natural Resource Conservation Service, and other agencies out into the field. We're really in a situation where there's enormous change. Before I leave for the day, can't help but talk about what's happening with migrating birds this fall. The bird flu has to have taken a huge impact, a big toll. We really don't know because there's no way to survey it. But with the tremendously cold weather we've got that's all the way down to the Gulf Coast, with the exception of people chasing geese, the comment throughout the entire lower Mississippi Flyway is, where are the birds? Here we have the coldest weather we've had in 25 years. In some cases, it snowed over a foot in New Orleans, unheard of. And people are going out into the marsh and they're not seeing the birds they expect. So there's something going on. I think the combination of drought for the last few years and potentially bird flu is indeed having a toll. I thank you so much for being with me. I'll be back next Sunday morning with much more on the great outdoors. I hope you enjoyed my discussion of Scotland. I guess next time I should talk a little bit more about the countryside and how spectacular it is and how absolutely awesome the people are. It's an absolutely beautiful country. Unfortunately, they have some very serious problems that will threaten the future of hunting. Thanks for listening. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.